And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode taking you through this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. A whole bunch of you responding with all kinds of wings and or restaurant selections, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on our text line at 615-737-1025. We really appreciate that. We'll get to that later in the show. But right now, we're going to switch gears back to the NFL and bring in our friend Albert Breer, senior NFL reporter at the MMQB. He is all over the place and does really great work. Albert, thanks so much for taking time to come on with us today. We appreciate it.
You got it. You got it, guys.
So, obviously, with the big news coming out yesterday with the Miami Marlins and the outbreak in Major League Baseball, many people began kind of connecting the dots and kind of forecasting what this could look like for the NFL once they resume play. How concerned are you about what happened with the Marlins and what that could mean for the NFL as they get back into training camps here?
You know, I obviously got the attention of people in the league, and I don't think, you know, what they're interested in so much is how it happened. It's more how baseball is able to contain it and manage it going forward. Look, these things are going to happen, you know, and I know, like, the league office and the teams expected, you know, you're going to have guys test positive. You're going to have opt-outs. Now, maybe they didn't do a good enough job of messaging that, you know, ahead of the open-up training camps where this still feels like a shock when guys are testing positive or opting out. But this is going to be part of the equation no matter what. You know, I think the bigger question all along has been, you know, how effectively can you contain it? And when you do have something that is widespread, that does hit a team, how can that team, you know, bounce back from that, and how can that team get itself in a position where it's going to be able to play games again? And so I actually think, you know, when the Marlins situation happened, you know, of course it worries people in the NFL seeing that, thinking, you know, that could happen to us. But I think there's also kind of an element of education there where, you know, now they're going to get to see what baseball does. They're going to get to see what, you know, the Marlins do, what the Phillies do, what happens in that sport now in the aftermath of all of this. And I would think that there's probably going to be at least a few things they'll be able to learn from it.
Yeah, Albert, you wrote about a lot of this stuff in your latest MAQB, including touching on the bubble idea. And I know there were a few players, actually one around here, Taylor Lewan, who had a tweet storm about why, you know, a bubble would make sense. But can you sort of, you know, describe to the listeners why that was never really a strong consideration for this league and not really realistic?
Yeah, the players were against it. The chief medical officer, Dr. Alan Sills, didn't think it was feasible. And this is back in April and May when they're kicking around different things, when, you know, I sort of started to understand the gravity of the situation and that it could affect their season. You know, and so it didn't really get off the ground when it was discussed between the players and the league and the players and the teams, you know, back in the spring. And I honestly think a huge part of that is just the feasibility of it. I don't think it's like basketball or hockey or even baseball. Like, you have a lot more people. You know, I think minimum, you're talking about, if you were going to construct a bubble, it'd be like 125 at least people per team. You could go to a pod format, but then, you know, okay, so now you got maybe 8 teams in 4 different locations. So how does that work? And are you able to find 4 locations that not only have, like, the hotel rooms, but also have NFL caliber fields, not just for games, but to practice on, that have weight facilities? It's just, you know, the logistics of football, I think, would have made it very, very difficult. And that's without even getting to the fact, like, and I know you guys know this, the attrition rate in the NFL is so high, guys coming on and off rosters because of injuries. How do you manage that and bringing guys into and out of the bubble? It's just, it would be very, very complicated to do it in the NFL, and they would have to do it for a longer period of time than hockey or basketball are doing it. And so, you know, I think they sort of came to the conclusion in April or May that if they were forced into that position, you know, then it may not be feasible to have a season at all.
Albert, you mentioned players opting out. I think the latest today, the highest profile player today to opt out was Dante Hightower of the New England Patriots. How prevalent do you think players opting out is going to be this season?
We'll find out in the next few days. I mean, we don't have a hard date yet on when the opt-out deadline is going to be. That's going to ride on, you know, when the sideliners get done. And so when the lawyers finish the sideliners to this agreement, it'll be 7 days after that. I think we'll see some more over the next few days. I don't know how many the number's going to be. But there are some at-risk guys. You know, and there are other guys, you know, like a Dante Hightower, that's going to be voluntary. And so I think you might have, you know, a couple per team. The Patriots have had more than others. They're an older roster. They've got more guys who've made their money, so that makes sense. And I think that, you know, in most cases, you'll be able to sort of point to something with each of these guys as a reason why they did it.
Yeah, the Marlins situation, of course, top of mind right now. You mentioned your piece that a lot of people are asking the question of, you know, what's the number on a shutdown, you know, for a team or for, you know, a game being forfeited? I guess as you talk to people around the league, how wide-ranging are those answers, and what would you think? How do you think that will look as we get going into the season?
Well, it seems like with the college programs, it's like, I don't want to speak out of school here because I don't cover that sport, you know, but I do follow it. It seems like the number, like with the college programs, like when you get 15 or 20, something like that, right? Like then they'll shut down. Would that be the number? I don't know.
A college team just had two staffers, and that was a shutdown reason, but of course it's preseason.
Yeah. So I think it's, I mean, that's something that teams are definitely looking for clarity on. You know, I talked to a couple teams yesterday that were, you know, seeking some sort of clarity on what would constitute a quote-unquote outbreak. And, you know, if you have an outbreak, then that leads to a shutdown. And so the commissioner, I think, is going to have to do something in giving the teams clarity, just to be fair. You know, and obviously I think there's going to be some discretion involved. If, you know, say your strength coach gets it, you know, then that's obviously different than someone on the practice squad getting it, because the strength coach touches so many different people and is around so many different people, you know. And so, you know, I think there's going to have to be some flexibility in whatever they do. But I do know that teams are looking for, you know, a hard number, like what would it take to constitute an outbreak and what would it take to trigger a shutdown. And remember, guys, like there's like player safety issues that could be tied. If you think about some of them, it's, you know, well, what happens if, you know, you have six cases, but all six cases are on the offensive line? Oh, like, can that team play that Sunday? Is it safe for the quarterback to play that Sunday? You know, there's just so many different questions when you get into the weeds of this that are going to be complicated. And I think that, you know, most of the teams would rather have at least some framework of answers to those questions rather than everybody working through this on the fly, which it felt like baseball was sort of doing yesterday.
Albert Breer, senior reporter at the MMQB, on the line with us. And Albert, I was talking with Joe yesterday, and I've always been a guy that really hasn't cared about the preseason or anything that comes along with it. But I think given everything we've been through with no sports and everything that's been happening, I'm actually going to miss preseason football pretty heavily. Are you going to miss the preseason games?
Yeah, you know, there are certain things I actually really did, like, genuinely enjoy about the preseason. Like this year, I think it would be like getting a chance to see Tua and Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert play, you know, like every year it's the rookie quarterbacks. And then, you know, if a new coach is bringing in something exciting, like a new system, like seeing what Joe Brady is going to do with the Carolina offense. So there are little things about the preseason that are always fun, and maybe they don't hold your attention for more than half hour, 45 minutes of those games, you know, but that's always something that you kind of look forward to. And then, you know, of course there's the first set of games where it's just the idea of seeing football, like real live football and guys in their game uniforms and all that different stuff, that's always fun. And so, yeah, I think there's absolutely some things that I think we'll all miss. And, you know, obviously it's going to be an adjustment for the coaches too. I talked to Bill O'Brien about this the other day, you know, and he told me he was talking with Doug Marrone about the fact that, you know, they may be in an advantage because those two guys coached in college. You know, Doug Marrone was the head coach at Syracuse, and O'Brien was the head coach at Penn State. And when you're in college, you have to play without a preseason. So there are all kinds of little quirks to this, and that I think, you know, some teams are going to do well with, other teams are not going to do well with. And I think to a man, what you're finding with most of the coaches that you talk to is that whoever adjusts the best, whoever has the players that are the most responsible away from the building, whoever handles the circumstances and is most flexible as they change, that those are going to be the teams that are going to do well with all of this over the next 6 months.
You know, yeah, on those preseason games, Albert, I've seen some NFL fans say, oh, good, just do away with them all together. I'm like, you know, a lot of times this month we need some kind of sports to watch. Like, I'm definitely not for that. But what would your ideal, you know, long-term number be for preseason games, especially given that more and more coaches, it seems, just play their key guys less and less?
Well, we're going to see, like, so, you know, next year when they almost certainly go to 17 games, the preseason will get cut down to 3. So that's one that's, you know, just automatic. I think 2 would probably be the best number, you know, where you have 1 where it's the starters getting ready and everything else, and backups and, you know, end of the roster guys playing the second half. And then maybe the second game is sort of like the fourth preseason game now, where you're, you know, letting guys kind of battle it out for jobs. So I think that that would make sense, and that would probably be enough. And I honestly think the one thing they could do that would replace some of that for all of us, make a bigger deal of the joint practices. And I don't know if you guys have been to any of the joint practices over there at the Titans facility, but I'm telling you, they are a fantastic take. Like, it is so much better than a preseason game. You get to see so many things that you normally wouldn't see. And it's, you know, linemen going up against each other. It's the receiver DB one-on-one. So you get to see the quarterback sort of operate in a different environment. It's, you know, it's just such a different thing. And I almost, you know, I brought this up a few years ago. Like, why not turn it in? And I'm sure you guys have these in Tennessee. You know, like some in some states, like the opening weekend of high school football, they'll have a jamboree where there's like a, you know, a triple header of scrimmages or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Turn it into something like that. Like, make it an event. Make it like a jamboree type event where you have, you know, 2 NFL teams in the field that are practicing against each other, and you sort of find a way to televise it and make it entertaining. Because it's so different, I think that that's sort of the frontier that the NFL could work with you know, where the players are in a controlled environment, injuries are, you know, less of an issue in that environment, and you're able to sort of generate something that's very different that the coaches would be appreciative of too, that I think would be a great take for everybody out there.
It's great stuff. Albert Breer from the MMQB has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Albert, thanks so much for taking time to join us. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too. Great stuff from Albert Breer there. That was really insightful. When we come back, we'll continue the NFL discussion with the Titans. Also get into the NFL 100 list a little bit. That's next. This is Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode. And Joe, the NFL has come out with their NFL 100 list that the players put together. They vote on the top 100 players in the NFL, and there are some surprises on there, and there's one in particular I want to get to here in just a second. But Ryan Tannehill comes in at number 68 on this list. The first time in his career he's made the NFL top 100 list. So obviously shows what people thought of kind of his ascension to power here in Tennessee, getting all the way up to 68 on that list.
That's interesting. Little respect for him. On another list, a lot of lists out there, our Mike Sando did his quarterback tiers. Tannehill still just a tier three. So, that's a GM survey. So.
Mahomes got to be in tier 3 too, right?
Oh, yeah. No, the exciting thing about that one is that Tom Brady has dropped to tier 2.
So. Oh, yes.
There you go.
Joe's hatred for Tom Brady and Michael Jordan.
No, there's no hatred, but he's old. Come on. Now, I don't hate old guys. I'm old, too.
I can't wait until a Tom Brady logo's on, like, a Detroit Lions
Detroit
jersey.
Lions jersey.
Like, the little TB12 logo on it. And it's going to really frustrate you, isn't it?
I do not hate Tom Brady whatsoever. I do think that, like, he's clearly the GOAT of all – no questions asked. Eh.
If he wins the Super Bowl this year with the Bucks, will you admit he's the greatest quarterback ever?
Well, again, like
– that's a no.
He might be, but the number of rings is not
– I understand.
You know, there's – Dan Marino has zero. Dan Marino, pretty good quarterback. But regardless, don't hate Tom Brady. It's fine. Now Jordan Brand on a Pistons jersey,
that's disrespectful.
That's ridiculous.
Well, one of the things that stood out to me on this NFL 100 list, Logan Ryan comes in at number 60 on this list. Now, remember, Logan Ryan does not currently have a job in the NFL, but is number 60 on this list among the NFL 100. I found that to be very interesting. Look, I think Logan Ryan's a really good player. I'm not sure he's the 60th best player in the NFL, but I think he's a really good player. But it is interesting where he comes in on this list and the respect that he has amongst his NFL peers. And had he not been asking for a ton of money, I would assume he'd have a job by now. But
yeah, this is a great example of the, you know, the differences in the, you know, metrics, advanced stats crowd, and even like GMs who are paying people.
Yeah.
And then how players look at things. I remember Kevin Byard at one point, either late last year or maybe right after the season, said, like, Logan Ryan just had one of the best defensive back seasons in recent NFL history, okay? So that's Kevin Byard talking about Logan Ryan. And if you look at Logan Ryan last year, all he did, he has great all-around stats. He made all kinds of huge plays. He was a huge part of what they did. Pre-snap, you know, all over the field. Again, you know, if you're cornerback, great blitzer. It's just like a receiver who's a great blocker. People say, I don't care. Can you cover someone fast? But he was an all-around terrific football player for them last year. But then if you look at the metrics in coverage, and we saw it, especially when Malcolm Butler and Adoree Jackson were hurt especially, he was really exposed. You know, he obviously has lost a step, and there's a reason no one has paid him what he wants and all that. So it's interesting. Like, I'm not shocked out of my mind. That's high. 60's high. But, you know, player, I mean, look, as a football player, he was really, really good last year.
He was. There's no question about it. And I'm sure he's going to find a team at some point. Just the price is not going to be what he thought it was.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he signs for.
Yeah, for sure. Another interesting person on the list that's had – a lot of interest around here in these parts. Jadeveon Clowney comes in at number 41 on the list. And Clowney's a guy who I know a lot of people have mixed feelings on him in terms of you look at the sack numbers and they're not really where you would expect them to be for a guy with his reputation and his skill set. But also you look at the impact he can have on the game as a whole. Certainly can be a game wrecker at any point. So 41, I think, is about right for Clowney. I don't really have much of a problem with that.
Jared Stillman ranks him 241.
241?
That's impressive. In his player rankings. Yeah, I think that's about right. He could be, I mean, a huge year from him, and he could be top 20-ish.
Yeah.
I think he has that kind of ability. Now, will he find it again? I don't know. Can he be healthy for a whole year? I don't know. But we're ranking players on, like, what they are at their best, right?
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then, yeah, I think that's about right.
Now, Keenan Allen comes in at 77 on this list and is upset, claims that he is the best wide receiver in the division, which, of course, features Tyreek Hill of the Kansas City Chiefs. These lists tend to upset people from time to time. I know Devontae Adams of the Packers last night was very upset. I think he came in at, like, 57 or something like that. So
okay.
It really upsets players when they don't get ranked high, or at least as high as they thought. But Keenan Allen, best wide receiver in that division? Yeah, I don't think so, buddy.
There's some young guys coming into that division who may soon pass Keenan Allen.
But I'll take Henry Ruggs before taking Keenan Allen.
I would
right
too.
Now.
I would right now.
Like right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, of course, when you say that, you're also thinking GM, like, I'll take that rookie deal for Henry Ruggs too, right?
But exactly.
Yeah,
that
of
too.
Course. No, but are the, is he better right now than him? Well, it's hard to say that. And this is a ranking of who's better right now. I agree. I would totally take Ruggs over Allen right now.
And Judy's with the Broncos, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the Broncos. I'd take him too. The Broncos have all kinds of new receivers coming into town.
Like it's no disrespect to Keenan Allen. Like he's good. Like he's really good. We'll see how good he is this year without Phillip Rivers. But I mean, come on, man. Like you play in a division with Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
Like that that's already like a no brainer. Like Tyreek Hill is a top five wide receiver in just the league alone. So like I don't even think Keenan Allen is the top like 10 wide receiver in the conference. So
in the conference, wow!
Yeah.
I'd have to think you about
might,
that,
you
but you can make
right.
a case. Yeah,
I mean, it's probably around that, you know, right around that 10 line. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, Keenan Allen should be pretty excited to make the list.
Yeah,
I mean, that's about right. Bottom quarter of the list. Yeah. That's about right for him.
Kevin Byard not mentioned so far in this list. Do we think he's been overlooked, or do we think he's higher up?
What was it? What was he last year? Did he make it last year?
I thought he did make it last year.
I think he did. It cuts off at like 4. They hadn't released past 40 yet, I don't think.
So, right. So the last one they've released is Clowney at 41. Is
I believe
that right?
So, yes. Yeah. So Byard not there yet. Hopefully he's in the top 40.
Then. So Byard, Lawan, and Henry still to come.
You would think so.
Lawan has not been. He has not been mentioned yet. Yeah. I would think so.
I mean, would you put Lawan on there? Top 50?
Well,
the season he just had.
Well, but another thing I think he had a great second half of the season after he came back from the suspension and got back, you know, got into the groove. I think it was really good. This is also how do you value positions? I mean, there's going to be tons of quarterbacks up high, right? I think left tackle in this league is very valued by everyone, including players. So I think he will be on this.
Lawan was 77 last year.
Well, then maybe you're right then. Maybe Lawan just doesn't make it. Now, then we'll see a tweet storm.
Well, now, if this is a player's list, too, how much are they factoring in the positive test that he had? Does that rub other players in the league wrong way?
Yeah, maybe. So maybe it's just Henry and Byard. Maybe it's just Henry. Hey, and if we devalue running backs, if players did, which they don't, like
maybe
the rest of the NFL
list.
World, then the only Titan on the list is Jadeveon Clowney.
I mean, Todd Gurley was at like 51 on this list.
Really?
And you're like, huh? If you watched Todd Gurley the last couple of years.
Like, Todd Gurley healthy? I guess. I mean, look, Jadeveon Clowney, I guess if we're going off last year, why would he be on this list? He didn't play that much, 3 sacks, all that stuff. But, yeah, Todd Gurley to me just seems like a guy who the knee has come back as a problem. It was a really serious injury in college.
Yeah.
He's not coming back to – I hope I'm wrong, but that's how it feels to me. That's a interesting.
Yeah, like
ranking.
I'm looking forward to watching him in Atlanta, but I'm pretty comfortable in saying the best days of Todd Gurley probably behind him.
Yeah. Now maybe David Johnson in Houston, back to the AFC South discussion. Even though the contract's ridiculous, what if he's healthy and is like good again catching the ball in the backfield?
Yeah.
It could be really nice for Deshaun Watson.
All right,
you know?
So Kevin Byard did not make the list last year. He made it in 2018. He was 80th in 2018.
He had a bunch of picks in 17.
So Kevin Byard probably – I mean, it's hard to jump up from not being on the list last year to being in the top 50 players in the league.
Yeah, except that they made that run, and he was a big part of it. And, I mean, I think most people in the NFL think he's one of the top –
Two or three safeties
in the league, right?
So, yeah, I think so.
I'm honestly not going to be surprised either way if he shows up on this thing. But yeah, you're right. That doesn't really bode well for him if he didn't.
But
make it
I mean,
all
but like you said yesterday, he's always been like people don't really look. They look down on Kevin Byard for no reason because he's a great player.
They call him Baird and Byard. And
people get his name wrong. Like
Deion Sanders making this list.
Yeah. I know who he is.
They don't put him on this list. Yeah. Like you know, it's just the people always sleep on Kevin Byard, but it's fine. I rather have that Kevin Byard who always feels like he has a chip on his shoulder than contract. You know, I got this big contract. I got to play like it, Kevin Byard. Okay. I want hungry. I'm not on the top 100. Okay, I'll show you that I'm better than Jamal Adams. And I want that Kevin Byard. So if that spices him up a little bit, I like it. Let's go.
I'm cool with it, too.
Keep him off the list.
Yeah, he's been like that his whole career, and it's worked for him.
Absolutely. When we come back, we're going to dive back into the Preds talk. Chris Mason, our good friend, will join us. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad.
This one, Robbie?
Oh, I know this
You
song.
Got this
Are you
one?
Kidding me?
He's one for one.
Absolutely. I mean, Chris, it's his jam. It's our boy C. Mace's jam. Hockey is almost here. We're less than a week away for things counting for real. And to help us talk a little bit more about that, we bring back our good friend, Chris Mason. C. Mace, what's going on, my man?
What's up, guys? Welcome back as well. I missed you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
Great to talk again.
Great to talk to you. We were talking yesterday. It's just so awesome to have hockey come back. Like, it was a borderline emotional experience walking into Bridgestone Arena for training camp. It's just so cool.
I felt the same. I think, you know, everybody that was there commented on how great it was to hear the sound of guys' skates digging in the ice and, you know, clappers going off the bar and off the glass and all. You know, you just see all the media and all of us and the staff that was there and all the players, just the look on their face to be back doing what they love to do and what we, you know, we love to watch them do and what we love to, the sport we love to cover. So I'm just elated that it's coming back, and the fact that they are in Edmonton now and they got on a plane on Sunday, it feels even more real. So it's going to be unbelievable.
C-Mace, we were talking earlier in the show about what should expectations be for this group as they're heading back into Edmonton. And I kind of phrase it like this, like, I don't know about you, but I feel better about the Predators heading into this tournament than I did had the season not been paused and they head into the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, I just feel like with players like Johansson and Duchesne, Arvidsson, all reset and refreshed, that this team could be more dangerous now than they would have been going into a normal playoffs. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with it. I really felt good about their game probably for the first time on a consistent basis at the end of the season when they did finish. I really feel like they were starting to come around and they started to look maybe how we all thought they would. But again, you know, just because the season was so up and down, you still never knew for sure if, you know, if this team would be able to carry that through into the playoffs. But I think even if you look at this paper, I talked to NHL Network yesterday and they asked me, you know, if it doesn't work out, are they going to look at blowing this, you know, team up? And I'm like, no. I said, obviously there's going to be some personnel decisions, you know, probably changed how they did in January or February right before the trade deadline that they were actually in. They decided to go with the team and not trade away some RFAs and or some UFAs and try to get some prospects or whatever, right? So you look at this team on paper, and having this break, you had a lot of your best players underachieve and not have the best year, you know, that we all expected and that they all expected and everybody. We've heard that all season long. So I agree with you in the fact that these guys, especially their top players, the guys that you mentioned, Victor Arvidsson healthy again, and you could tell those guys are honestly the ones, when people ask me who stuck out, those are the guys that really stuck out, because as an athlete, when you have a down season, the best feeling is when you get a chance to come back and you get an opportunity to prove people wrong, to prove yourself right, to prove, you know, your team and your fans that, you know, this is why they signed you and you are that player that they thought you are and that player thinks he is. So I think those guys, Johansson, the guy, we've seen him, he can be an utter dominant player at times because of his size. And when he is fully engaged, he can be that way. Matt Duchesne, you know, we've seen flashes of him. Kyle Turris, we saw him get better under John Hines and play better. Kyle Granlund was awesome. But, you know, Victor Arvidsson, he came back. You could tell he just didn't have that burst. He wasn't 100%. And Philip Forsberg, I really still believe the best is yet to come with him. And he looked great at camp, and he looked extremely hungry. So I do like this team's chance because on paper, and if they had to play to their abilities this year, this is still a really, really good hockey team.
Yeah, Chris, with Victor Arvidsson, even for me, it was obvious. I'm looking like, well, he's faster. That looks like fast Victor Arvidsson out on the ice. And of course, watching those guys work together, it seems to me like this is maybe part of the answer on Ryan Johansson and part of the solution getting back with those guys. But from your perspective, what did you see from Ryan during this mini camp? And did you see anything that led you to believe that it will be a different player and more of the, I guess, old Ryan Johansson in this tournament?
Well, I just think, you know, he's had some really big playoff performances, and he seems to show up in those moments. And that says a lot about a player because, you know, at times during the regular season, you know, especially this year, a lot of guys you're questioning, you know, kind of where their head's at and, you know, if they're, how they're handling, you know, going through a tough time and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, when he first got here, and I credit John Hines a lot of how he handled those kind of situations to try to get his players out of that funk and, you know, make them earn their ice time. And Ryan Johansson is one of those guys that, you know, Coach Hines took ice time away for a few games and tried to send a message and just try to let him reset and get his head back, you know, into this season to get to that level, because he knew if they were going to make the playoffs, you're going to need, you know, your number one center to be there and make an impact. So I think for him, what I notice when he is fully engaged is his physicality. You know, he does have a little bit, he's such a nice, you know, funny, easygoing guy. But when he's on the ice and you know he's fully engaged, he's got a little bit of a mean streak in him. He'll get in there and he'll go to the battle areas and he'll get physical. But it's also his vision and patience and the balance between when to shoot, when to hold the puck, and when to pass it. And it's just that confidence level that a player like Ryan Johansson, with his size, and he's so good in the faceoff circle, but the confidence level and just that awareness to when to make those plays and not rush it. But I saw that. And the biggest thing with him is I thought at training camp he had a business-like approach. You could tell he was out there and he was serious just by his body language alone. And I think Ryan Johansson, to me, is a very body language guy. When I'm watching him, like a lot of players are, you notice certain things and the looks on their face, how engaged they are. And he, to me, looked like he was ready to go. He was ready to, you know, when this thing started, he wanted to be that impact player.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason on the line with us. And Chris, obviously a big topic of conversation has been the goaltending situation that the Predators have, regardless of who starts game one, whether it's Saros or Rene. Joe and I have pretty much agreed that they're going to need both goaltenders if they make any sort of run of consequence in these playoffs. How would you, if you were John Hines, handle the usage of both goalies, given that this playoff format is going to be a little bit more compact than you're traditionally used to?
Yeah, you know, this to me, this is the one it's going to be the toughest decision for John Hines, and I think a lot's going to depend on how the guys look in camp. I thought both guys looked really good at camp. I thought Saros looked a little better in the scrimmages. I thought he was awesome. I don't know how much of practices and how much of those scrimmages are going to go into this decision, but we'll see on Thursday how he starts the goalies. But they are going to need both guys if they're going to make a long run. But to me, you know, you got to get through that first series, and there's going to be decisions to make. Obviously, if whoever they go with, they're going to have to make a decision on the back-to-back in games 2 and 3. So I don't know. You know, there's no travel, so they don't have to worry about that. You're in the same spot. Don't have to worry about that. Guys are going to have an opportunity to recover. What do you do? What do you do if you're split 1-1 and you're going into game 3 and it's a back-to-back? Do you switch up goalies if your guys played well? Might be easy if your goaltender struggles in game 2. And loses that one to go to the other guy. But I'll be very interested to see how this is handled. And I guess what if they're up 2-0, you know, and then you're playing game 3 and you have an opportunity to close it out. Do you switch goaltenders because you don't want to play a guy back to back? I don't think so. I don't think I would do that as a coach. But I mean, you know, it's all going to depend on how confident they feel in the other guy and to put him into that situation in a potentially series closing game. I don't know. What do you do? Going to be interested to see how these decisions are handled by John Hines and the coaching staff and the rest of the NHL, quite frankly. But I think, like you said, though, if they do make a long run, they will definitely need both guys, and they've got two good guys. So I think they're very comfortable in that position.
Well, since you've put the coaching hat on, Chris, who are you starting in game one?
Well, I haven't watched enough of training camp, and honestly, I was asked this question yesterday, and I'm not trying to take the easy way out here, but I I don't know. I can make an argument for both guys. Both guys at certain points of the season were the unheralded number one goaltender. Pekka Rinne, obviously at the start of the year, he was awesome. Went through the tough patch. Juuse Saros at the end of the year was absolutely lights out. His last month and a half or whatever it was, he had like a 94 save percentage. He would have no question started the playoffs had they started and the season finished on time. I have to think that it's, you know, with the way the scrimmages went, that, you know, and the season and everything taken into account, that Saros might have an edge based on the scrimmages that I saw. But again, I don't know. It's a fluid situation, and I know they're putting a lot of stock into how training camp goes. And, you know, they have a few days here leading up to that. But I really can't tell you. I can make an argument for both guys. So it's going to be it's not easy for John Hines. But the good thing is he's got two great options, and we'll see Thursday, I think, how he disperses the goalies for that preseason or exhibition game with Dallas.
See, Mace, last thing for you here. Just we all know how important Johansson's line is going to be, but we've seen it time and time again in playoffs of years past, whether it was against Winnipeg or Dallas, whatever the case may be. You're going to need more lines to contribute offensively rather than just that line. How important is Matt Duchene's line with Kyle Turris and Mikael Granlund going to be to what the Predators are ultimately able to accomplish here in these playoffs?
I think you can look at every line, but that line in particular, and this is why they brought Matt Duchene in, so they could have that scoring spread out, so they could have that 1-2 punch, those top two lines that would create difficulties for the other team to match against. You know, if you have Ryan Johansson, you've had the Jofa line, you know that no matter what, they're going to get the other team's checking line or whoever that other team wants to get out there to try to shut them down and take their chances with the Preds' other lines. Yes, they're a very deep hockey team, but, you know, you could try to eliminate their top offensive threat. This way, with that line, and if Kyle Turris can play the way that he played at the end of the season, Mikael Granlund was having an unbelievable finish to the season. He scored, I don't know how many big goals night after night, and he's that type of player that's just such a gritty, grindy guy that's tough to play against. And if Matt Duchene can play as good as he has looked in training camp, and to, you know, the potential that they feel that he can play up to, I mean, that line has a huge opportunity to make a major impact, and they are going to need it. Like the goaltending, you're going to need two guys. Well, you're going to need two top lines if you want to make a long run as well.
Preds TV analyst Chris Mason has been our guest here on Morning Drive. C. May, so good to talk to you, my friend, and can't wait to get hockey started this week, my friend.
Thanks, guys. It was a great day. We'll hope to talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Chris Mason, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what Chris had to say there and wrap up the show as well. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. What a way to close out the show here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. A little Africa by Toto. A lot of Toto talk here in the show today.
Well done.
I'm here for it.
That's not the Weezer version, right? Because the Weezer version sounds exactly like the Toto version. Oh, yeah, that's class. That's just the golden voices of Toto.
Yes, it is.
Just have to pot it up so you can make sure you listen to the voice that this is not Weezer.
I mean, seriously, like, there's no way a sports talk show has talked more about Toto than this one has today.
No,
you're welcome, Toto.
Yeah. Need some royalty checks.
But, you know, they got some jams. Toto and Magic City.
Yeah. Two of them need royalty checks.
I mean, if Toto wants to give us some royalties and Magic City want to give us some wings, I'm perfectly fine with
that. Yeah, I'm cool with that.
We should do a remote at Magic City with Toto playing at the Braves.
I don't know if we can do that.
That's a lot.
With Adam Vingan.
with the Vingans together.
Both of the Vingans.
Joe, we have really good news on the Major League Baseball front. According to Jesse Rogers and Jeff Passan, no Philadelphia Phillies players or coaches tested positive in the most recent batch of coronavirus tests. So obviously really good news there. The Marlins were playing against the Phillies, so you wondered maybe there was some contact there and maybe the Phillies test would come back and they would test positive for COVID-19. They have not, so that is very good news, at least this part of it, for Major League Baseball.
Is that good news or bad news? I thought we were rooting against sports. Don't we all want sports?
That's just you.
Sports writers don't want sports to happen?
That's just you.
Okay. That's just me. No, apparently it's a whole bunch of sports writers.
A whole bunch of sports writers.
Rooting against sports.
Nobody wants it.
Yeah. We would hate for that to happen. Yeah, that's good. You know, because the idea that this might all of a sudden hit this team, that team, and then you got multiple series being affected. So hopefully this gets contained. Hopefully this thing is a nice early warning shot to everyone. And again, like, I don't think we've talked enough about just the Marlins themselves on Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Don't play. Yeah. You know, that, like there's something that can change moving forward. But hopefully this is not like a harbinger of all the troubles that are going to happen, but instructional moment for people that will make things better. See? Positivity.
There we go. No question about it. Chris Mason in the last segment talking about the Preds coming up this week. Thursday, a game against the Dallas Stars in an exhibition matchup. And then the real thing begins on Sunday against the Arizona Coyotes. One thing he said that really stood out to me was Ryan Johansson and kind of how you could see body language-wise what he's feeling, kind of what he's doing out there. I've never really thought about it, but he's right. Like, you could see, you could tell when Johansson is engaged, he's into it, he's ready to go, and he's feeling confident. And you can also tell when things aren't going all that well for him out there. Sometimes it builds a little bit, and the frustration you could see come out of it. There have been a lot of times where Johansson's been frustrated, takes a stupid penalty, and all of a sudden there he is in the box. Saw that a lot this year. I did notice in training camp a few times that I was either there or I watched it. It's almost like he's viewing this as kind of a new opportunity. Like, I've got my swagger back. I've got my line mates back. Let's go out and make this thing happen. And to me, if you're a Predators fan, that's really good news, because that's when Ryan Johansson's at his best, when he's got that kind of goofy swagger about him that he plays freely with.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think I hear what you're saying. I kind of took what C-Mace was saying also as just a little bit of seriousness that sometimes he lacks. I think,
yeah,
like, the goofy personality is good in the room, but, you know, he's a kind of a happy-go-lucky guy, and so maybe, you know, like, focused seriousness sometimes could be a little bit better for him. But I think
that's what you heard sometimes in Columbus as well, like with Tortorella.
Yeah. And that's a guy you know.
He doesn't have a lot of patience for all that.
That marriage, the more you think about it,
that's never going to work.
That must have been something else, those two guys.
Ugh. But it is exciting because, look, regardless of what decision they make, and I think C. Mace even said he's leaning, maybe Saros might have the edge. I think Saros, at least in my personal opinion, has a pretty clear edge at this point. I would be surprised if Saros is not the game one starter. But it is interesting, like, if it's 1-1 in the series heading into game 3, what do you do? Because, like, conventional wisdom would tell you it's back-to-back, start the other guy, especially, like, if you've lost game 2. But what if you win game 1, lose game 1, win game 2? Like, do you just go back with Saros again in game 3? Like, these are really tough decisions that John Hines is going to have to make.
Well, like C-May said, what if Saros is just so great in the first two? But let's say he takes heavy, heavy work. Because, yeah, that's the point Hal Gill made yesterday, is what kind of game do they play? It's not just how they play, what's the bottom line, but, like, you know, how much work did they have? How grueling was the game? So let's say Saros has two really good games, two wins, but that's heavy work, and he had to work hard and stand on his head a little bit. And now it's like, man, you can end the series and get extra rest if you just win this game. So put him back out there, even though he might be tired.
Yeah.
Do you feel good about him? Do you disrupt him if you sit him? That's the thing, too. I do think that part of it is where Hines has an advantage. And that, like, I honestly think UC Saros could get pulled for game 3 to rest and would understand it, and it wouldn't be like a problem
for
him.
Yeah.
And I think in other situations, no matter what you want to talk about, goalies being friends or whatever, I don't think it's always that simple. So, yeah, there's so many different ways, obviously, it could go that could lead into game 3. And, again, who knows? There may be a game 1 to game 2 switch because, well, like, it's a 5-game series.
And, like, how does not having to travel factor in all this? Because, like, that's part of the back-to-back situation, too. Like, very rarely in the NHL – are you playing back-to-back games at home? It's usually like back-to-back in Ottawa and Toronto, or it's a game here in Nashville, and then you're playing in Minnesota the next night. So you've got travel to factor into it as well. How big of a deal is it not having travel? Are you more comfortable just sticking your goalie back in there after that? I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is.
Yeah. But I think we've almost gotten to the point now where if Pekka Rinne were to start game one, even though I bet you the NHL as an entity still probably expects that just because everybody knows Pekka Rinne and he's been their goalie forever, I think it would be a decent-sized surprise
if
it wasn't Saros in game one.
I do, too. Got it real quick. Got a text in on the text line. Rinne has been pulled in big moments. This is from Ben. I would rather just see what we have in the young guy. It's going to be lightning in a bottle either way if we make a run. Consistent teams can at least fall back on consistency. Predators can't even do that in this weird season. We'll see. It's going to be a different time here. So that's going to do it for Oh, man.
Beautiful.
I knew we'd get there at some point. A little hold the line.
We love you, Toto.
We do.
Thank you, Toto.
Yeah, thank you.
For the amazing two songs that Marquise knows.
Who are we going to pick tomorrow? Blue Oyster Cult Day on Wednesday.
Oh, we might do that, actually. I don't know.
Yeah, good day. Well, that's going to do it for us today here on Morning Drive, Joe. It's been a wonderful show. Munson, it's very good to have you back, my friend. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back with you, too, man. I'm back, and I'm better than ever.
Feels good.
Darren Donick and Chase coming up next. You've been listening to Morning Drive. We'll see you tomorrow. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.